Well, welcome to our segment two, and this is where we do our Bible study, as you just heard. So we are ready to open up our Bibles to 1 Samuel with our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Amy, I'm glad to be here today. We're going to cover 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 31 through 37. So if you remember where we left off yesterday, Jonathan had just taken a bite of honey and discovered that there had been an oath that his father had made the men take, a ridiculous oath that did damage to the men and to the army and to the whole of the Israelite nation in general. So we're going to see what's going to happen next. 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 31 through 37. They struck down the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint. The people pounced on the spoil and took sheep and oxen and calves and slaughtered them on the ground, and the people ate them with the blood. Then they told Saul, "Behold, the people are sinning against the Lord by eating with the blood." And he said, "You have dealt treacherously. Roll a great stone to me here." And Saul said, "Disperse yourselves among the people and say to them, 'Let every man bring his ox or his sheep and slaughter them here and eat, and do not sin against the Lord by eating with the blood.'" So every one of the people brought his ox with him that night, and they slaughtered them there. And Saul built an altar to the Lord. It was the first altar that he built to the Lord. Then Saul said, "Let us go down after the Philistines by night and plunder them until the morning. Let us not leave a man of them." And they said, "Do whatever seems good to you." But the priest said, "Let us draw near to God here." And Saul inquired of God, "Shall I go down after the Philistines? Will you give them into the hand of Israel?" But God did not answer him that day. Okay, now remember yesterday that Saul had made the men swear an oath they wouldn't eat anything because he wanted to avenge himself on his enemies? He's pushed his men past their breaking point. The men were absolutely famished after their fast day of battle. And we are seeing Saul's inability to lead, influencing everyone. They had to have food, so when they saw the sheep and cattle, they started eating. Unfortunately, they were eating unclean meat because it still had the blood in it. Blood represents life, which is why God gave the command not to eat meat with the blood in it. Now, to be perfectly honest, they could have waited. They could have waited to eat. The men were sinning here too. However, without Saul's unreasonable demand, they wouldn't have been this hard-pressed, and if he hadn't failed them as a leader, the temptation to pounce on the spoils would have been greatly diminished, if not completely removed. Just think of how hungry you would have been after a day of fighting, and without any nourishment at all. They were hungry, and that was all they could think of. Saul led them into this with his sin. Yes, they still had a choice, absolutely. But if Saul hadn't made such a ridiculous demand on their physical abilities, they wouldn't have fallen so easily to this temptation. When Saul hears about it, he chastises the men. Even though it's his fault they're so hungry, he yells at them about breaking faith. He does provide a way for the men to eat now without sinning. He organizes this barbecue pit so the men can cook their food before they eat it so there won't be any blood in it. And that was helpful. Saul then builds his first altar to the Lord. Let me repeat that because it bears repeating. Saul builds his first altar to God. Again, how sad is this? Who made Saul king? Who chose him? God did. Yet this is the first time that Saul ever built an altar to God. Saul had an appalling lack of concern for spiritual matters. However, the reason that Saul has built this altar does him no credit. He does it because he still has a vendetta, and he is trying to force Israel into a fight with the Philistines. He wants this fight. And when he tells this to his men, there is one priest who stands up and says, buddy, why don't we ask God? So Saul asks God, and God doesn't answer. None. Why not? Well, as we will see later, God won't answer Saul because an oath that Saul made, an awful oath, but he brought God into it, was broken during the battle. God's not going to answer Saul about military action until that is resolved. Saul is the one who bound the men with the oath and brought God into his nonsensical oath to mediate. When Saul seeks God's favor now for more battles, he finds that the oath he said has been broken and that his own words have come back to haunt him. Now, there are several key things to pull from this passage today. First of all, God can be silent. There are times when God's answer is, "You need to get right with me before we can talk about this." In 1 Peter 3:7, we see a specific instance where God is talking to husbands and he says, "Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." Husbands have a greater authority, a greater responsibility, and because of that, there is a greater expectation on them as well. The hand of God rests differently on your husband than it does on you, and they will have to answer for that one day. There are times when we come before God arrogantly, seeking our own will. We act like we're seeking him, but we're just paying him lip service. Our hearts aren't in it. Our eyes are on our own control and what we can do, not what his will truly is. And just because you say, "Thy will be done," doesn't mean you mean it. And he knows it. There are times when we've started on an endeavor and we haven't even asked God for his guidance, and then halfway through we quote-unquote ask God for his guidance, and when he doesn't give us direction, we're confused. God may be telling us that we need to back up and see how we got there before he will show us how to move forward. There's a song by Scott Crepane called "Sometimes He Calms the Storm," and the chorus says, "Sometimes he calms the storm, and sometimes he calms his child." And that's so true, because let's face it, the storms are going to come in our lives. And some of the storms we will have caused for our own selves. Sometimes God will calm us and help us weather the storm, and other times he will stop the storm. So today, ladies, my challenge for us is this. Is there a storm that you're going through in your life that you're trying to steer the boat? Is there a place in your life where you need to come to God and repent so that you can get right with him before you address anything else? In the New Testament, Jesus says that we need to take the plank out of our own eye before we try to address the sin of our brothers. And sometimes I think that we don't understand that when things aren't going our way, or what we perceive to be our way, sometimes that's our own problem. We need to come to God and repent, and truly repent, not just a general, "Oh, sorry, God, forgive me for whatever I did wrong today," but specific, asking God to show you where you need to be more and more made into his likeness, where he can remake you more and more every day. So that's my challenge for us today, to stop to think about it.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.